From partners to enemies, the Sudanese army is battling the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. It's a power struggle that has turned into a fierce armed confrontation. But how will this play out? And is Sudan's unity in danger? This is Inside Story. And welcome to the program. I'm Darin Abugaida. The streets of Sudan are once again seeing the devastating effects of conflict. Political differences are plunging the nation into further instability and threatening to bring full-scale war. The latest violence began on Saturday after weeks of tension between the army and the powerful paramilitary group known as the Rapid Support Forces. Millions of people in the capital Khartoum are at risk. Water and electricity have been cut in many areas. After years of coups, protests, and political instability, the people of Sudan were getting ready for a new government. But now those plans are at risk as the threat of an all-out civil war looms over the country. The former Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, who had a crucial role in the fragile democratic transition, is pleading with both sides to stop the fighting.
My first message is to General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the leaders of the Sudanese military, and to Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo and the leaders of the Rapid Support Forces. The exchange of fire must stop immediately, and the voice of reason must rule. Everyone will lose, and there is no victory when it's on top of the bodies of our people.
All right, let's take a closer look at what's led to this unrest. So the most recent bout of instability emerged in 2019. That's when the military and the Rapid Support Forces ousted the longtime leader Omar al-Bashir after months of mass protests. 2 years later, they carried out another military takeover, this time by pushing out Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, who was seen as the face of the transition to democracy. Military leaders signed a deal with politicians last year. In it, they promised to pave the way towards a civilian-led government and fair elections. But that has yet to happen. A new government deal was scheduled to be signed 2 weeks ago, but disputes about how to integrate the Rapid Support Forces into the army escalated and delayed the process once more. We'll now bring in all our guests joining us from Khartoum. We have with us Maryam El-Mahdi, who's the leader of the National Ummah Party and a former foreign minister of Sudan, Ala Eddin Nagug, a spokesperson for the Sudanese Professional Association, a part of the Forces of Freedom and Change Coalition, and also Dalia Mohamed Abdel Munaim is joining us, who's a Sudan-based activist. Thank you for your time with us on Inside Story. Maryam El-Mahdi, first to you. Just earlier this month, your Secretary General of the National Ummah Party said that the political process to restore transitional civilian rule has reached its final stages, and we hope that it will be completed in the coming days. So have these latest developments come as a shock to you, and what's the official reaction of your party?
Thank you very much, Ms. Devine, and I welcome you and all your followers and your guests. Actually, this came as an expected surprise because we knew for the last at least 6 weeks, things were escalating to the maximum between the two heads of the armed groups, the Sudanese Armed Forces and the Rapid Deployment Forces. And though they were both of them committed to the framework agreement, which was also, as mentioned by you, finalizing in the last steps after we finished the five pledged workshops, ending by the SSR workshop, which also ended in a hostile way, let me say. So it was like an introduction that things are not going well between the two, and that would definitely affect the political.
So what is it, Maryam El-Mahdi, that was missing? What was it in that agreement that was missing or that was wrong with that agreement that got Sudan to the point it is at today? Because also at the time, your head of the political bureau, Mohamed El-Mahdi Hassan, said that your party was actually hoping to convince the non-signatories to come on board on that agreement.
True. This actually, we had two obstacles. outstanding issue between the two armed groups, or the heads of the armies, the head of the Rapid Deployment Force and the head of the Sudanese Armed Force. This was a problem regarding the SSR, the security sector reform. And that is about how what comes first, the reform in the security sector or the merger of the security sector. This was all the time an issue of debate. And for that, there was a technical committee, three of, from each party, to settle that. And actually, before even this technical committee, already things on the political background, both of them agreed and signed to 37 principles to according to which the security sector reform should be done. And this also was signed by all the heads of the signatory groups.
Okay, let's bring in one of the signatories. Thank you so much. Let's bring in Dr. Alaeddin, because your group, in fact, was one of the signatories to that agreement. It was really meant to usher a new era, a new political process for the country. What's gone wrong?
Yeah, thank you for the interview, Devin. The problem is that they were not both committed to the agreement. Let's say frankly that they are saying that, but one of the generals was really committed. That is the Rapid Support Forces General Hemeti. But the army leader was saying so, but intentionally he was not committed to that. That appeared clearly in the workshop of the SSR, where the army paper saying a lot of things that against democratic transition. They were asking for independency in their strategies, in putting the army strategies and the military strategies. They were asking for not to be under the civilian leadership. And they were asking for the command center of the SSR and the process in which the DDR will be under them, while the Rapid Support Forces were committed to the transitional democratic transition. They were committed to the SSR command center will be under the civilian leadership and will not be under a militant. And they were committed that the military strategies and the army strategies will be under the civilian leadership. So this is a major difference in the mindset and thinking between the two generals. And even when they signed, when they signed that agreement of 37 principles, General Hemeti said clearly, guys, we are signing, but I hope that all will be committed. That is the issue. He knows that Al-Burhan will not be committed for that exactly. And that the Muslim Brotherhood in the army, the people in the army will not make this will go. And that's what happened in the media. A lot of the Muslim Brotherhood people in the army and outside in the media, they were spoiling the agreement. And they were spoiling the fire and making more fire between the RSF and the army. And they reach what they want by what's happened yesterday. And in the 15th of April yesterday, the morning, there was a committee. That's as said Mariam Sadiq, the committee with the head of Al-Hadi Idris. And they was asking and starting working to de-escalate the position.
But okay, let me just stop you right there for a moment. Let me just stop you right there for a moment.
Rapid Support Forces camp and things escalate.
Let me bring in Dahlia, also joining us from Khartoum. Dahlia, so not long ago, as we were mentioning a moment ago, the Rapid Support Forces and the military, they cooperated together to derail Sudan's transition to democracy by spearheading the coup in 2021. They worked to overthrow Omar al-Bashir in 2019. So they seem to come together when they absolutely have to. What was it, in your opinion, that that got them to this point that we see today?
No, they thank you. First of all, thank you for having me. They came together, or they would come together when it suited their own needs,
right?
Not necessarily the needs of the country. And what happened now is, for me, it's very basic. It's a struggle for power. It was all very. There was a lot of the delays in signing the agreement, and the framework kept, you know, kept coming up, and it kept being pushed back and back. And it was very clear that was the big obstacle standing between. It was the merger, the time frame of the merger, the you know, the conditions they kept putting in, and the negotiators kept trying to brush it aside and say this is okay, and they kept trying to placate both these sides. But it was very obvious that neither of them was willing to give an inch, and neither of them was actually came in with full sincerity that they wanted the framework to succeed. And what's been happening since yesterday is very clear to me that this is the end game for both of them, and it's a power struggle at this moment, and the ones who are paying the price and paying the very hefty price are us, the people.
You keep talking, you mentioned that this is about power. What's at stake if both parties lose their power? Are we talking here about more economic interests? Are we talking about the personal ambitions of Burhan and Hameti? What is it exactly, or is it both?
I would say the ambition of the entities, both entities, the RSF, where they've come from and what they are now, and the army, the institute of the army. This is the Sudanese army. Hameti has seen his power and his position grow in the past few years. And this is obviously somewhat of a threat to the army. And don't forget, the army is still very much Islamist influenced. The remnants of al-Bashir's rule is still very much in play today. They never went away. They've always been there. And they've started to re-emerge in the past few weeks. So they've become more vocal. They've become more outspoken. And, you know, the power play was between the army and Burhan. For a lot of people, was seen as he couldn't take a position. So he was being pushed by the Islamist factor in the army to take a stand. And at the same time, he was being pushed by, you know, the negotiators to take a stand. And at the, so it all came to a head.
Let me just get Mariam's take on this. On this point specifically about the Bashir era loyalist, Mariam, there are some reports that suggest that there was internal pressure within the Burhan camp from the top brass not to sign that framework agreement because they feared that a new political agreement would harm their economic as well as their political power. What do you say to that?
Well, I think actually things are very complex within this relation. Actually, for some time, the private or the personal relation and trust between the two men was the basis of the linkages between their two institutions. But because of so many developments that took place in the last 4 years, they grew separately for many reasons. They got separate economic interests and investments, separate regional and international relations, and separate political and social backgrounds for their support. That's why both of them developed eager or aspiration for power, and for that, actually, I believe the Islamists and or the actually the NCP were highly around both of them, and they made sure that lots of lack of trust to develop between the two. And I believe that where both of them are made to turn into more into enemies rather than the friendship that joined them. To the extent that if you look at what happened in 2019, because of the direct relation between al-Burhan and Hameti, al-Burhan solely canceled a very important article in the Rapid Support Force law, which gave the head of the army the power to marry or to dismantle the Rapid Support Force. He did it because of this direct relationship. Okay. Now, things because of this development, of course, the Sudanese political, the Sudanese armed forces is the national army of the country. They couldn't take the fact that there is another very enormous power, military power, to come into their challenging. So for that, a lot of lack of trust and of anger
Okay, let's bring in Dr. Alaeddin. What about trust in the process, Dr. Alaeddin? Because some people say, look, the entire process of the framework agreement was pretty much rushed and it was ad hoc, and the international community was really just hoping to wrap it up really quickly so that they can celebrate the signing of a new agreement. To what extent do you think did the actual political process itself accelerate this confrontation between the rapid support forces and the army?
No, it didn't. It didn't. Let's speak frankly. Yeah, the two guys have a wish or eager for power. But one guy say that he is with the political process. The other guy say, yeah, he's the political process, but in his way, not the way that democracy should be there. They cannot have democracy. The army cannot have democracy as they like. They want independence from the civilian leadership. They want SSR to be away from the civilian leadership, to be under their command. It cannot be like this. It cannot be. There is no democracy as such. They can have such like a sharing or different centers of power, but there is no democracy. This is the main concept. This is the main issue. Yeah. Maybe, yes, I can say that both of them have eager for power, but maybe Hemeti won't this eagerness for power after the transition. He wants to come by a civilian leadership by elections, maybe. But right now, he is accepting the SSR and the democratic transition. But Burhan is not accepting the SSR with the essence of democratic transition and the principles right now. And this will make
if we fast forward to today and what's happening right now, Dr. Alaeddin, both sides, this is the language that's coming out from both sides. You have Hemeti, just allow me, you have Hemeti, the military calling for the dismantling of, quote, a rebellious militia. And then you have Hemeti saying that the armed forces chief, that is Burhan, is a criminal. So what does this language actually signal to you in terms of what happens next and how long this is going to continue?
We were as a political or activists or the FFC or the parties who signed the framework agreement, we are always saying that we need a one national army with a good intention or a national doctrine. This was not there, neither in the army or neither in the militia. So that was the essence of the DDR. Who was accepting this DDR in the way that it should be was the rapid support forces. Speaking frankly, the army was not, okay? And that was the causing the problem, because the Muslim Brotherhoods were much indeed inside the army. And these people inside the army, like Kabashi, Ibrahim Jabir, and so, they were really against the framework agreement and against the political process. That was clearly shown when Kabashi started to speak in loud, in gathering, about the framework agreement and about so and so and so, while he was quiet for a long time. I think this last workshop with the SSR that makes the Muslim Brotherhood inside the army very alarmed.
Let me bring in Maryam for a moment. Maryam, you can comment on what Dr. Alaeddin is saying, but I also just want to ask you to give us a feel of what it's actually like being in Khartoum right now and what people are feeling and what they're saying.
My first question is to Dr. Ala. So where do we go from here? I mean, we've reached the point where there's actually fighting in the streets of the capital. So where do we go, you know, calling Burhan a criminal, and Burhan designated the RSF as a militia, an outlawed militia, is not good news for us as Sudanese. So where do we go from here? All of us have been stuck at home. We don't know what's happening outside. We hear of the numbers of casualties, of those who are injured, those who have been killed. We know nothing of what is happening. And we put our faith in the politicians, in the parties, in the negotiators to get us out of the quagmire. But if anything, they've pushed us back further down in this quagmire. So my question to you, Mrs. Maryam and Dr. Ala, where do we go from here? What's next going to happen?
Let's hear what they have to say. Let's bring in Maryam. Maryam, go ahead. Where does Sudan go from here?
This is a question. This is a very serious thing. What happened is unprecedented. This is it is so irresponsible. It is so unacceptable that our army hits its own cities. and its own civilians. And now they are taking, it's the prison inside the neighborhoods. Now almost every house they have gun shots at their windows. So many people died inside their homes. We are stuck for the last 38 or more hours, not having any supplies. The electricity is out. We run out of gas for even the people who have generators and so on. It is a very serious, and people, so many people are stuck in the airport, so many people are stuck in the streets. There is no safe. I have been trying all day to have a way, safe path through the ICRC and the Sudanese Red Crescent with the Rapid Support Force and the SAF. At least I could get the three of them, SAF, and the ICRC and the Sudanese Red Cross, but I couldn't have any access to the Rapid Support Force to save, to provide for some routes. Actually, the problem is really what has happened now in Sudan is unprecedented. And
Let me just ask you this, because there is diplomatic pressure. We understand there have been phone calls that have been made to both camps in Sudan. The U.S. Secretary of State has released a statement, the U.N. Secretary General. Will this diplomatic pressure make any difference?
And there is a PSC.
Right.
There is a PSC meeting today. Tomorrow there is the U.N. Security Council. But unless we, the Sudanese, see the development in this and we unify ourselves against this, what happened is unacceptable. We cannot compare Sudanese armed forces to any other force. That's why it was one of the essence of our political operation is to have one Sudanese army that is professional, that is national. So that's why it was part of our job for this political operation to have merger of the peace agreement militias and of the rapid support.
Okay, let's bring in Dr. Alaeddin, just because we're going to be running out of time. Dr. Alaeddin, next steps. Who can help defuse this? What about countries that have regional interests in Sudan? For example, countries like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah. This is quite important question. The countries in the region have two positions. Either one of the position of a friendship that they want to solve the issue and they want a democratic transition path in Sudan. And there is other countries that they don't want the democratic transition path in Sudan and they want the conflict or they want the armed leadership. And the second one is Egypt, definitely. Let's say it frankly. Egypt was spoiling the agreement. Egypt's position was bad for the framework agreement. Egypt's position was bad for a negative for the political process. They are looking for an army leadership. They are not looking for a civilian leadership. They are not interested in democratic transition path, unlike Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and other regions and international committee. And Egypt had trials to spoil the agreement was much before with the leading of the ambassador here and with the meeting that was organized in Cairo for the Democratic Coalition. And they came with the statements that they are with the army leadership and the army share of power.
The next question
is to cease fire, and we should go back to the political process that was there with the SSR.
Dr. Ala, don't you think the onus is also on our army to stand up and be an independent and be a source that works for the country? Our army continuously for the past 30, 40 years has always bowed down and followed the leads of other parties, you know, regional parties or regional countries. It has never stood up for us. And what's happening right now in the streets of Khartoum and in Darfur is proof of that. That the army does not care about the people.
Neither the army is a national army, and neither the militia is a national army. They are both having negatives, and they are both should be in an SSR and a DDR and the civilian leadership and the international supervision.
Okay, let me just jump in there because we are running out of time. I just want to get more of a sense of what's happening right now on the ground, because there are reports. I'll ask you this, Mariam, if you may know, Dalia, fighting is not confirmed to the capital. The clashes, we understand now, are in the northern province. They're in Darfur region, Port Sudan, on the Red Sea. These are porous borders, aren't they? So do they risk becoming flashpoints, do you think, for a wider conflict? How dangerous is this?
Well, I just read a report or a post saying that Chad has reinforced its borders because they're afraid of a spillover from Darfur into their borders. And I spoke to family in Port Sudan, and they said yesterday it was really bad, but today it's a bit calmer. But Darfur is not calm. I mean, if we think Khartoum is bad, you're talking about a state that is the size of Western European countries. And, Sudan is a big country. We have no set borders. Our borders, like you said, are very porous. So there is that fear of a spillover effect. So what do we do then? And the same thing with what happened with the capture of the Egyptian soldiers. What's Egypt's reaction is going to be? These are their soldiers. They were here for joint military drills. They've been captured. What's going to happen? And I think we need to get away from all the politics talk, like this person failed or this person did not, and just try to think practical and try to think, what can we do? What steps can we take right now to put an end to what's happening, to de-escalate?
Because I'll give you the final word on that. I'll give you the final word on that, because we did hear from Dr. Alaeddin and Mariam on that. But what do you think needs to be done next? Is it the diplomatic pressure that can help, or what is it?
Diplomacy is not going to work. I think basically they need to yank those who have interests and those who have a sway over whether it's Hemeti or Burhan to really step up. And I think this is where the role of the likes of the EU, the Troika, the USA, and the likes of the Saudi government and the UAE and Egypt really... Otherwise, it's going to come into their borders. I don't think Egypt wants any more problems on their borders. They have enough problems of their own. They don't want to have another border issue. The geopolitical strategic location of Sudan means it can affect... There's Ethiopia on the one hand, there's Eritrea. Something needs to be done, and they need to really step up. I am tired of all these condemnation statements coming out from the likes of the UN and the US Foreign Ministry and the UK. They're useless. They do nothing. We need action. Someone needs to step up, pull back these two men, de-escalate, and then we take it from there, because what's happening right now, it does not bode well for the near future.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us, Mariam El-Mahdi, Alaeddin Nagug, and Dalia Muhammad Abdelmunham. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. Join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is AJInsideStory. From myself and the entire team, thanks for watching. Bye-bye for now.